Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the September 9th, 2024 meeting of the Madison Landmarks Commission. I'm going to hand it over to Lauren to walk us through some processes and procedures for tonight's meeting. Lauren.
Landmarks Commission members, please use video if you're able so we can ensure we have quorum. If you wish to speak, remember to use the raise hand feature. Also use the raise hand feature to make a motion or second. Voting will be considered unanimous. However, if you object to a unanimous vote, please use the raise hand feature when the chair asks for objections and a roll call vote will be taken. Members of the public who are registered to speak, the name you entered in Zoom must match the name you entered in registration. You will remain muted until called upon. You will have 3 minutes to speak and staff will tell you when your time is up. Please do not use your video. If you turn on your video, it will be shut off. Chair, the floor is yours.
Lauren, first I will call for the approval of the August 19th, 2024 meeting minutes. Is there anyone who would like to motion? Molly, anyone like to second? Edna? I am going to assume unanimous consent of those meeting minutes, and I'm going to move on to agenda item number one. This is the public comment period of our agenda. This is the portion of our agenda in which if members of the public have something to comment on that is not on our agenda, they would have the opportunity here. However, a quick glance at my public comment registrant list shows we have no one registered for this item. And so I will move on to disclosures and recusals. Members of the body should make any required disclosures or recusals under the city's ethics code. Does anybody have any disclosures or recusals they'd like to make? Seeing none, I am going to move on to our consent agenda of this meeting. It is the practice of the Landmarks Commission to approve a consent agenda. This includes items that are removed from the agenda to be voted on as a group on which staff believes an application has had sufficient review towards approval with all of the conditions placed upon it. The applicant has accepted those conditions, and there are no individuals registered to speak in opposition to the item. The consent agenda is addressed at the beginning of the meeting to allow applicants and registrants to leave the meeting unless a member of the commission requests separation, and then that agenda item is placed back on the agenda and reviewed as part of the regular course of business. The following are proposed for consent agenda, and I believe that is just agenda item number two, Legistar File 84544, that's 919 Spate Street.
And Chair, I'm sorry, I want to interrupt. I had prepared the consent agenda slide and had totally, I put the right Legistar number and then totally copied the wrong address. And my apologies, that was meant to be helpful and instead it was confusing.
No problem. But right, it's the Spate Avenue one.
It's the Spate Street, yes.
Excellent. Heather, is there anything you want to say before I put this to the commissioners?
No, the outstanding items in order to meet the standards of approval came in. All conditions are met and meets standards and yeah, it didn't seem to make sense to go through the project again to talk about that it did. You asked for certain things, they did those things.
Perfect. So I guess, do any commissioners request separation of this item? Seeing none, do I have a motion on the consent agenda?
Move approval.
Rich, do I have a second? Thank you, Molly. Sorry, saw Molly's hand first, Edna. I am going to assume unanimous consent then, as this is the consent agenda. And I will move on to agenda item number two. This is Legistar File 84805, 1908 Arlington Place, the construction of an addition in the University Heights Historic District. And I will also open the public hearing for this agenda item. Heather, I hand it over to you.
Okay. Okay, so up on the screen we have 1908 Arlington Place, a property that Landmarks Commission has seen a couple times in the last couple of years. So this is the street view. This is one of the properties in University Heights where the street facade is not the front facade of the building. But for this particular project, we're talking about an addition on the side, the functional rear of the building, that would serve as a garage. So the street view shows the current parking area that is up on a retaining wall ad adjacent to the structure. So, proposed work, construct an addition on the northwest corner for an attached garage. This would supersede an approval that Landmarks Commission gave last year that was for a detached garage structure. So it would remove that portion of the certificate of appropriateness for the detached garage, and instead this would be about the addition to the building that would be an attached garage. So here we have, there's more photos in the submittal, but I included the photos from the submittal that deal with the side of the property that the addition would have. So we're seeing, again, from the street view, so the pedestrian line of sight from the public right of way. And you can see there's significant grade change on this property. So the current parking area is up on a retaining wall, and the addition would be here in this corner that largely doesn't have windows. It would cover over some windows, including there's two long windows here that are on the sort of functional first floor area, and the proposal would replicate the windows that are up on the third floor in the attic area. Okay, so here we have some renderings showing us where the addition would be located. There's as sort of a typical building of its time, there's a lot of complexity going along with the different styles of roof. So the intersecting hip areas are in keeping with this building. And as we see for the porch that's over on the opposite side of the building, has a similar slope for the roof, so meets those standards. One of the things that I called out in the staff report was, we can go back to the existing pictures. There's the, well, so it's stucco, and then there's the decorative trim that goes around the windows, and there's a couple of areas where there used to be roofs before additions happened. But there's also this decorative band that goes around the base right above the foundation level. And for the proposal, one of the things here, this area below the garage is unexcavated, and so there's no functional living space or a usable area down there. So it doesn't necessarily make sense to put in windows, but it does create this large blank area. And so one of the things I suggested was it, continuing this band that serves as the top of the foundation level and continue it across this structure to create a belt band to help break up that significant mass that otherwise doesn't necessarily have any openings. This is the back of the building and of the property. And so these are areas where we already see there's some large expanses of walls without windows. But otherwise, there's some type of articulation or something else breaking up that continuous space. So we have some elevations here showing these different areas, and approximately where the dotted line is, which is where the floor for the garage area is, would be approximately where I'm suggesting the belt band is located. I also call out, let me go back up to the pictures of the windows, call out that we need details on the window framing and that we have projecting window sills. We've had some approvals in recent years where we specified that the window trim needed to match the profiles of historic, but then what happened was people were picture framing around, which makes sense on new construction, but doesn't make sense on these buildings. So we need some type of detail instead of just taking it on faith that they will follow the historic pattern, that there is going to be a projecting sill and that the trim around the windows for the window frame will replicate the profiles of the historic or approximate. So, those are two quibbles that I had as staff. There was also the proposed garage door. makes sense on a post-World War II building, but less so on this building. Going with the manufacturer that they had cited as part of their submittal, there are a couple of door styles, and there's a great deal of variations within these two door styles that could be a possibility. So I offer those out as possible suggestions. They're welcome to go with any other manufacturer, but I put that in as a condition of approval for working out final details for garage door style to be approved by staff. Oh, I'm sorry, that is from previous. I forgot to delete that slide. So applicable standards is 41.26, standards for additions. There's more detailed discussion of each of the standards of approval in the staff report. So staff believes that the standards for granting a certificate of appropriateness are met and recommends the Landmarks Commission approve the proposal with the following conditions. So updated design to include extension of the foundation course trim band around the addition and also window trim details. So we can have those specifications included in the submittal packet for what is being approved. Also submit updated garage door and four light window specifications to be approved by staff. Let me go back to for the over here, the windows within the for these windows here where there had previously been, you know, full double hung windows, but they still want windows in this location, but it then would intersect with the roof of the garage addition. We have this pair of four light windows that are historic and existing, but we didn't have details on the windows for this location. They should be four light windows, just as those that are current. Let me go back to pictures right here for what is currently there, but we didn't have details on those particular windows, so we need those. All right, and so, oops, those are my conditions of approval.
Heather, does anyone have any questions for Heather before I move on to the registrants? Seeing none, I will bring up the first registrant. I have a Monica Messina registered neither in support nor opposition, wishing to speak. Is she? Do not see her in the list of participants, but there is a phone.
I will say
Heather.
Monica did submit written comments, and one of her comments were that she thought the large expanses that don't have windows, that there should be a more regular window pattern within these large expanses of walls. That would be more appropriate to the rhythm of windows on the existing structure.
Heather. Roberta, you have your hand up.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you to staff for your work on this, for your comment on the garage door.
Ms. Gassman, are you Monica Messina or are you?
Am not.
I'm sorry, then if you would like to speak, you'll have to go out and register on our website.
Okay, I did register to give comments, so you want me to go back out and come back? I
One
sent it, I
second.
submitted a comment.
I'm showing that you're registered on the meeting watch list, not that you're registered for this agenda item.
Okay.
So we're going to need you to go back and register to leave a comment.
Chair, there are other registrants.
Yes, I am going to move on, Roberta. And if you choose to register, I will check in with Lauren after everyone else is done. And if you have registered, you will have an opportunity to publicly comment. So I'm going to move on to Brian Reber, registered in support, wishing to speak. Brian, I see you. Excellent.
Hi, my name is Brian Reber, and I own 1908 Arlington Place. I'm the applicant for the certificate of appropriateness for the garage addition. I tried to match the design elements, such as with the roof form and window styles, to the original house to maintain the architectural compatibility. The garage is set to be subordinate to the main structure, being set back and lower in height, and the garage is consistent with the context of surrounding properties, where similar attached garages exist on 25% of the historic resources. Additionally, I reviewed the staff report, and I'm happy to incorporate its recommendations into the projects. So thank you all for your consideration.
Excellent. Thank you, Brian. I appreciate your comment. Jean, are you raising your hand because you wish to speak, or are you Monica Messina?
Hi. I'm actually speaking for Monica because she can't get through to you. She's one of those phone numbers down below the 770 number. She's waiting to speak, and she texted me to ask that I let you know with a raised hand.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Lauren, are we able to unmute Miss Messina?
I can't. I want to say it's *9 to unmute from a telephone, but I can Google that quickly.
Okay. I think that worked. It looks like Hi. You are. Hello. Thank you, Jean.
Hi, this is Monica Messina. It was actually *6. I regret that I couldn't join, but once again, I'm having trouble. It asks for a passcode from the various devices I have. I can't access the meeting without a passcode. So that's why I had to call in.
That's
no
problem.
So my comments... Excuse me?
Oh, I said that's no problem. Please go ahead.
Okay. My comments, as Ms. Bailey referenced, were in the... And I just wanted to make sure that the members of the commission were able to see what was posted today, which is that long expanse of the garage that extends beyond the end of the house and is east facing. It's great that Ms. Bailey suggested the band, but I think it's going to be really off-putting to have just a wide expanse. I think it's more than 13 feet or something like 13 feet of plain stucco. And in order to create the symmetry and match the look, to have at least one window to match the west facing side that has two windows for the longer expanse. So that is my suggestion. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you so much. And I'm glad you were able to comment by phone. Okay. I have one last person registered in opposition wishing to speak, Kurt Stege. Kurt.
Yes, I am here, and I am speaking solely for myself on this. I don't think that there's been a comment yet to show that this home was designed by Claudin Stark, one of Madison's most revered architectural firms. And I would hope that everyone on the commissioner, all the commissioners, have looked at the previous submission for a garage, which was done by an architect, Arlen Kai, and that is a sensitive and sympathetic addition. This one is not. It's not even close. I have no idea who prepared these drawings. The drawings are not accurate. They totally missed the design elements in the upper windows, the inverted, no, it's not an inverted, it's a Y shape in many of the windows, including, I think, all the windows on the third floor. I guess I'll say that the north, west, and east elevation shown all show major blank areas with no attempt at landscaping, no attempt to disguise, no attempt to make it compatible. The standards here Our new addition shall be designed to be subordinate and compatible with the character of the structure. The addition shall be visually separated from the principal building. The alignment, rhythm, and size shall be similar to window shall be similar. And it should be constructed on a secondary or non-character defining elevation so that historic materials and features are not obscured. Well, you may call this the back of the house, but for everyone driving by, it's the front of the house. I would suggest that many of the photos of the so-called comparison buildings show garages at a lower level, precisely as Alan Kai had designed in his accepted by this commission design. As far as I'm concerned, unless you already knew that the 1908 building was a Claudin Stark, and you are quite familiar with the work of that firm, and you have carefully studied the alternative, truly subordinate design, you have not done your homework. You should defer this. I think Mr. Morrison, Commissioner Morrison,
Kurt, that's your time.
And he should be. He is the architect on the commission. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Kurt. Lauren, I'm going to go back to you. Check if I register.
Roberta did register, neither in support nor in opposition, and wishing to speak.
Excellent. Go ahead, Roberta.
Sorry, thank you to the staff for your work on this. And I wanted to say, okay, I guess I can't have my video on. All right, I'll just say that I do agree. I have a few brief points. I do agree that the current garage door does not fit the character or the age of this historic home, in that it's designed by Claudin Stark, as the previous speaker said, and in that it's in a historic neighborhood. So definitely the garage door change should be made. My second point is I do agree with Kurt Stege on the fact that Arlen Kai's design was very sensitive to historic preservation and the fact that this was a Claudin Stark design. That's number two. Number three, and I don't know if this fits within your scope, excuse me, I'm not up on all the parameters of the current Landmarks Commission guidelines, but there are telephone and other wires going from the middle of the house, which is now the view of the house from the street. As Mr. Stege said, that is now the current front view of the house, even though when designed, decades, decades, decades ago, it was a side of the house which had an orientation toward downtown and the lake. If you ever take on such issues, it is my recommendation and of my husband, Lester Pine, since work's going to be done on the property anyway, that that opportunity be taken to bury those wires, which are an eyesore and do not fit into the look of or the period of this historic home. So those would be my comments.
Thank you. Heather, I don't believe we have any purview over utilities, correct?
No, and we wouldn't have the legal authority to require work elsewhere on the building. Our purview would just be on the proposal.
Thank you. Okay, I'm gonna go, I guess I'm gonna see. Does anybody have any questions for any of the registrants who spoke before I close public comment? Seeing none at this time, I think I'll leave it open just in case we have any questions. I guess we'll open our discussion. And does anybody have any comments or questions for Heather? Otherwise, I'm looking for a motion.
Heather, do we know what the purpose of the change was or why they scrapped the initial approved design?
I think that question would be better addressed to Brian Reber, who is the property owner.
Yeah, okay. Is Mr. Reber available?
He is still on the call, yes. Mr. Reber?
Hi, Brian here. I just like the kind of ease of access being attached and then also preserving more of the backyard space. So I like the functional design better.
Thank you.
Anyone else have any questions? Oh, sorry, Maurice, go ahead.
Are we in discussion on this? That there was Rich making a motion on this, or
no, I didn't make a motion. I just had a question.
Oh, mm-hmm. Well, I'm comfortable with this. I mean, I like this. I mean, what's your thoughts, Rich?
I mean, I am sympathetic to the. Issues that Kurt Steggy brought up, but I mean, I don't think it's enough to deny the project.
Okay.
Personally.
Okay, because if it's personal preference, I'm not with, but I mean, if there was a proposal before that's been changed, he's past that now. I mean, I'm not in going to want to require him to go back to a previous architect, you know, if he doesn't want that, and if it's already meeting staff's approval based on these two items, change garage door. As far as the wrap around the bottom, this is my first time hearing of that, but I think I'm comfortable moving, you know, making a motion to approve this. Katie, that's where I stand on it. I'm gonna move to approve this.
Thank you, Maurice. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Thank you, Maurice. Or, thank you, Rich. Sorry. Okay, I am going to assume unanimous consent unless I see otherwise by a raise of hands, either in your video or digitally. Seeing none, thank you everyone, and thank you, Mr. Reber. Please work with staff on those conditions. Next up, I have, we were moving into regular business. So this is agenda item number 4, Secretary's Report, Infill and Historic Districts. Heather.
Okay, before everyone has a panic about this presentation, it is 98 slides. I'm not stopping to talk about every single slide. This was a workshop session that, oh, Aldermani. Oh.
You need to unmute yourself.
Sorry, you guys, I have to go, but I just wanted to say to Heather, she led on the 98 pages. I actually went through it, and it'd be kind of fun to do the quizzes that are in here that you guys look
yes.
like you do. Okay, so I
was it was good
for another meeting. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so let me share screen. This was a session that I helped present at the National Alliance of Preservation Commissions a month ago now. So it was different cities when we were presenting on the successful infill design. And I went first, and so that was easy there. Everybody was supposed to give one project example, you know, talk about the context and standards of approval. There's commercial, there's residential, and we did these quizzes with Menti, which I found really delightful. But so let's go through. I wanted everybody to see how what we're approving looks like in reference to what other municipalities are approving, because it's different. But then local preservation is supposed to be leading with the local flavor of what you think is acceptable and what you think is approvable. So different municipalities have different things, different boundaries on what they think is acceptable. So we talked about the philosophy of the Secretary of the Interior, different infill examples. And so those are circled. We were supposed to guess which was the infill, and apparently we guessed correct that it was number four. Although we'll go back to that was the, it doesn't have overhanging eaves, and that was one of the things that made it. Okay, so we did a poll at the beginning to talk through like what was the biggest priority, and then we did the same poll at the end to see if things had shifted as a part of the presentation. I talked through the infill design at 654 Willie Street because that is one of the infills that came through approvals with our updated ordinance. And so I talked through process for updating the ordinance and how the different historic districts had had wildly different standards. And the approach that we had for the updated ordinance with the 200-foot rule and using that range of context, looked at here's what was existing, but also you can see the reference historic resources in the vicinity. There's our palette of what we're referencing. And then, you know, here's what Landmarks Commission approved. So I did a word cloud for this part of the presentation. And so it, watching it live, it was hypnotic. Different things were coming in, but the biggest was that people were saying compatible. And mostly there's a lot of really positive things. It's appropriate, it's differentiated, sympathetic, but there's also one of the large things is generic. Blocky, I don't know what, necessarily what you would take that for. There's a comment about inconsistent fenestration, mega block, but boring. So our historic district standards for infill, it's wanting to blend with the historic resources, but not necessarily become a statement in and of itself. And I don't know, in looking at the additional projects, the infill design is proving to be very successful with the intent that we had of making things blend in the background. But we aren't necessarily designing things that would potentially be future landmarks. We're wanting it to blend in the background, not be a statement piece in and of itself. And that's playing around in my head. I don't have any suggestions about directions to go. It was just something I noted. So people, what the question we asked at the end of each of these was, is this something that your commission could approve? And most everybody was like, yeah, we could. So this is an example from Denver, and this is a residential example. Here's the context of the neighborhood. Larger context of the the stuff that's in the historic district, the other things that are nearby that are, you know, historic-ish as infill and then not at all. This was what came into them to staff as a proposal for infill in that historic district with all these little single family residences. And so they worked with the applicant to do something that didn't look like that. And so this was what they had. So these are duplexes. So there's, they have alleys in Denver. So there's entrances on the front and on the back for the units. And then otherwise, they also have this thing in Denver for these buildings that have commercial forms that are actually residential. And that isn't something that you see necessarily in other places. And it's not something we see here. But these they did as duplexes, as opposed to this attached thing that they had. So it didn't necessarily change the density, but it went with a design that was more in keeping with the architectural references. So people were supposed to, you know, which one, the one that they started with or one that they Landmarks approved, you know, which one? And people were like, yeah, we think the one that the Denver Landmarks approved was the better way to go. So would you approve? Folks said yes. And by the way, yeah, here's the finished product, what they look like. Looking at Miami, this one I thought was fascinating. So with this one, you can see, so here's the subject site. It's in a residential district that is largely single family residences, but it is right next to another district that has large commercial properties of a larger building footprint. Unlike our project where there was a variance to expand the references across historic districts, they didn't do a variance. They just talked about context with this one. So here's the commercial corridor with the large blocky things that are across the street. But then here's what's in this neighborhood. Again, these tiny little things. And here is the residential structure. It's a multi-unit residential structure that was proposed. And here was their context piece for the staff report. Again, we're seeing very small single-family residences. but they ended up approving this larger multi-unit building. And it's an incredible design, but the mass and scale seems out of proportion. Again, they didn't go with any variances, but they approved it. So this one was a little controversial for the folks who were attending, and they were like, no, this would be a problem for our commission. And it wasn't that it was too modern, that they were for the discussion, it was that it was too out of scale. And so folks went with the too modern, but then talked about that really was that it was about mass and scale, and that wasn't one of our options. Oklahoma City. So they talked through their different standards, location, this Paseo neighborhood district, get a feel for what's going on here. We've got this residential context, pulling from Sanborns because we all do it. We have this empty lot, and they were talking about doing infill into this lot that didn't have a house in it. So here was the previous proposal that was approved, but then never built. And then here was what was proposed, and it's historic-ish, but again, it doesn't have, it will read as a product of its time, but we don't have any overhanging eaves. It gives that the very, sort of crisp, modern, but very different from these more sort of bungalows that are all around it. Contextual setback. There's discussions back and forth about the different building materials. They talk through different concepts. And one of the things they talked about was that the things on the front seem very harsh, and they wanted something to provide a bit of a buffer. And so what they ended up doing, they didn't do a porch, it's still a stoop, but they did these planter beds that came out that helped to give that sort of feel of a porch. But again, this is very modern. We have these, fixed or casement windows, but we don't have double hungs. This is very much a product of its time, but to me, it reads as very modern and not necessarily fitting within the context of the historic district, but this is what Oklahoma City approved. So there was discussions on this about which one would have been more appropriate, what was originally approved, what they came in with, and then what they ended up with. So there's a lot of no too modern with a few tweaks. So still, for the folks who attended, they were like, there was a sense of discomfort. Cincinnati. So they're looking at how historic fabric has changed over time in that city. But this had, here's this large empty lot, and it's been empty for a while. And so they were looking at infill in this location. And we have some context here. You can see otherwise, it's relatively dense. This is an area that is being revitalized. More context. This was mixed use. So they're doing, it's historic renovations. They were doing some adaptive reuse of some of the existing structures here. And then this would be the area that they did the infill, and then the stairway and elevator corridor up front. And wait till we get, so this is the finished product. So they were talking about the references with the metal details. And so they've got metal around the windows for all that, we have this cast iron for these oriole bays, and it's very modern. This is a low-income housing tax credit project. And so this is affordable housing that is here in the middle of their historic district, and they've got a mixed use space. They've got a commercial space down below. Here's it looking head on. Well, that was a proposal. So was this a successful infill project? You see, there's a lot of middling on this. And I think people were struggling with the architectural vocabulary that, again, this is very modern, but does it fit in the district? Folks were a little uncomfortable. And then we were supposed to guess, because they didn't tell us that it was affordable housing. And so some folks guess workforce, so more people guess luxury apartments. But no, this was an affordable housing project. And apparently it's won some awards. So I thought that was fascinating. So some folks were saying, with a few tweaks, there's still some no too modern, yes. So this wasn't a sort of rousing yes. But one of the things that I was thinking about with this building is that it has the potential for becoming a future landmark. And is that something that historic district standards should take into account. There is an alternative design variance in our standards. So, you know, I don't know, thinking on it. Looking in Raleigh, again, we're talking about, well, so they've got Tale of Two Infills. They've got one building that was, they've got two projects right across from each other. So this was constructed in 2009. It is following the references of the neighborhood. It blends very well. This is, you know, historic-ish. But then the folks across the street didn't want to do historic-ish. They wanted to do this. And then it was the loudest voice opposing this sort of neo-prairie style coming in were actually the people who had just done the infill across the street. They're like, no, we did this thing that blended and they should too. But so here's where this ended up. There were some tweaks, but otherwise this is still very modern. I would call it, yeah, a modern interpretation of some prairie-ish kind of stuff going on here. But you know, they're calling it modernist revival style. But very modern. I don't know that this would get approved by the Madison Landmarks Commission. I don't know that we would say that this meets our standards without talking about a variance. So there was a thing in Vanity Fair. Is this house too modern to exist? They got a lot of pushback going back and forth about, I'm trying to remember where this ended up, because it was that he had proceeded. I can't remember if he maybe tried to proceed anyway without the approvals, and was he going to have to tear it down? And but so here's where they are today. They're with each other across the street, both infill. And yeah, there was, which one do you think is more compatible? There's a large grouping with traditional, but there were folks who were saying that no, they thought that both buildings worked. Does the new building compatible, but you know, comply? Would your commission approve? We have folks with a few tweaks. And I mean, with a few tweaks, I mean, that can mean so many things. Okay, so shifting on. This, again, is very, you can see that it's doing some references to historic, but again, very modern in a lot of different ways. This is from Nashville. So we've got... oh, this is near, or maybe it's part of Music Row. Not that way, I think. Going through the different standards. This is a structure directly across the street, so pretty grand. Got a four square. And then we've got this building that is very boxy. And I guess modernist revival might be the best way to think about it. And they, so it's got this hipped roof, which is, you know, you see these sort of pyramidal cottages, but their front porch, really, it comes off the side. It's got this wide brick area. This was also, I guess, a heavy lift in Nashville and controversial, and people were uncomfortable with it, but it ultimately—
That's a new building.
That's a new building. It looks very neo-1960s, doesn't it?
It does.
It looks like this is the place where, you know, the Masons gather to have their meetings. Nashville's a fascinating place. So this is their front porch. And yeah, this was, well, you can see the dust on it. This is not a super new project. This was the model that came to their Historic Preservation Commission. And obviously
it
it's been around
for a little
bit.
Is it residential?
It's residential.
Oh my God.
This is their front porch. I know, it looks very commercial, very business.
Educational almost.
Yeah, that too.
I agree with her. It looks really similar to an IBEW building in Milwaukee on West Wisconsin. It had, if you took the porch off, that's exactly what it looks like. The IBEW.
Yeah, this some type of social fraternal order should meet here. That's what it looks like. But no, it's somebody's house. So so one of the questions here at the end, does your commission think about contemporary design? And we have frowns upon, tolerates, encourages. Would your commission approve this? And a bunch of people were like, no, too modern. And also just, it seems really, if we're talking about architectural vocabulary, what Rich was saying, that this doesn't look like it's residential. White elephant building. It's literally the White Elephant Building, but you know, also in other ways too. So this one was fun in that the person who owned it wanted to build something new there, and some folks wanted to save it. So they picked up and they moved this building. And so they building move, a smaller building, so less complicated than the recent move that we had in our town. Moved it across town. They did a context for it for infill. I mean, it's an old structure, but infill in its new location. it had some, you know, unfortunate things happen to the windows over time. And so they fix that up in its new location. But keep in mind these unfortunate infill for what will come up here in a moment. They went and looked at some historic pictures. And you see there was some ghosting for some things for the windows. And so here's where in its new location and its new siting where they, you know, did a rehab and they, you know, put in some more period appropriate windows and did some work with the cornice. And so, you know, it's a gorgeous looking building. But also for the place where this went out from, the guy who was like, no, I don't want to spend all that money on fixing up this building. I want to construct a new building. Let's see. Oh, well, this ended up, this was a mixed use, I think. And they had the residential coming in on the back. Oh, wait, but on the far right side, this was the new building that replaced the historic building that they took out. So it still has these things that look like unfortunate, like 1950s infill on this, you know, turn of the century commercial building. But this is all this right here. This building is new construction. This one on the end is an entirely new building. So whatever, you know, so talking through stuff and folks were like, yes, we would approve this, the infill, again, it's mixed use. They've got the residential up front. They've got an accessible entrance on the back. Oh, maybe it wasn't a mixed use. Maybe it was entirely commercial. And then at the end, the different elements, and there was a slight change in what folks thought was appropriate. Building form became number one. And I think the buildings that were more commercial in form as opposed to residential being put in residential uses. So that is a very quick and dirty. This session was, let me stop sharing. This session was popular enough that there was a request to have an NAPC webinar for talking about infill. And so I'm going to do that at the end of the month. All of you have NAPC membership as members of the commission. Hopefully you're getting those emails, but we need to choose a new infill example. So I was going to put it to you for suggestions of what you think the new infill example from Madison should be. One of my thoughts was to go ahead and talk about controversial infill. So the Blair project with using the variance for referring to the historic district across the way, that might be a building to talk about. We might also talk about the Old Spring Hotel and as a residential form and infill in that neighborhood. Those are both projects that had complications and lots of moving parts, but we're talking about one's single family residential infill, one is a mixed use infill, or no, that one is purely residential, isn't it? I'm gonna stop talking. So, feedback, discussion.
Looks like a fun session.
It was a fun session. It was a good conference.
Did you wow them with our excellent development in the city? And
people really liked the 200-foot context. And I had several people come up and ask me about that. Folks who were in the process of trying to update their ordinances. And they're like, "Ooh, that is a really great approach." And I was like, okay, we didn't invent that. That is something that was already in place in one of our older districts. And we thought that that was a great way to go. And so we carried it into this new one. But no, folks were impressed with that. I did another session on our underrepresented communities resource survey. And folks were super excited about that kind of work and got a lot of questions. So yes, people were excited with the work that you're doing as the Madison Landmarks Commission. So thank you. Okay, if nobody has anything, if you want to individually or, you know, not, you don't have to send me suggestions. I'm going to put in my updated slides for the session, which is going to be, I think, on the 24th, the 20-something. There's an announcement details. But yeah, that's what I got about infill. Oh, go ahead.
Well, maybe you could give us like
more time than just jumping on you right now.
Well, no, like, what do you know, of these six projects, which ones do you think we should go with? I don't know.
Well, I mean, we haven't had a ton of info, which, I mean, makes sense because, you know, we're dealing with historic districts. I was thinking about all the infill that had happened on Willie Street, but a lot of that happened right before we changed the ordinance. And so it was, before those ordinance standards. I'm trying to think.
Well, you could certainly use Essen House, even though it's on hold or whatever. Not on, I mean, it was approved.
I don't think it's on hold. It was approved. It's got, got its approval.
Maybe not on hold, but working through its approvals.
Right on. Okay.
When did we review that, like that thing that's going on? It's being built on Willie Street right now, the one where they wanted it to be one building, that one over
838 Williamson. Yeah. I think 838 was the old ordinance. Well, surely not.
Edna was here for that.
I'll have to go back and look.
I'm like, I know Edna was here for that one. So,
okay. I will go back and look at the timing on that because, yeah, that one. And I'm trying to remember if St. Vinny's was old ordinance or new ordinance. It hasn't been that long. On the other hand, you know,
yeah,
it's longer every day.
New.
Is it new ordinance? Right on.
I think I was here for that.
Yeah. Okay. I just remember Edna had very good like planning notes about the building on the street. I was like, oh, it'll be nice to have. Like, I feel like it was fairly early in her tenure, but I remember being like, it's going to be so nice to have a planner here to talk about that stuff.
Yep. Well, I will take a look at those infills.
Thank you. Yes. And I made a note also, Heather, if I think of anything. Okay, last item on our agenda, buildings proposed for demolition. Do have one person registered, but I don't know if they are, oh, yep, he is still here. John Rowling registered neither in support nor opposition. John, do you have anything to? Oh, sorry, you don't wish to speak. So could I just ask you what building you are registered to speak for what you're here for? Is he probably here for all of them? Well, I guess we'll move forward. I'll give it to you, Heather. And if he unmutes himself, there he is.
Here I am, and no, I do not wish to speak. I'm just observing. Observing on these.
Okay, excellent. Thank you so much. Okay, Heather, I'm going to hand it over to you.
Okay, so first, the easy one. So 3441 Burke Avenue. The single family home was constructed in 1930, and I'm sure that there are portions of it in there somewhere that were constructed in 1930. There is no preservation file and there's no state site file. So there's a staff recommended finding of no known historic value. But here are your suite of motions that you could make.
Is there a motion?
I'll move a.
And I see you seconding. I'm going to assume unanimous consent and move on.
Okay, so now we're getting slightly more complicated. So I've got two of these grouped together. So the next three properties, for all that I'm going to do a pair and then do one separately at the end, are part of a proposed redevelopment by the Madison Development Corporation for infill affordable housing.
I'm sorry, I must have been sleeping I didn't know that this was on the agenda. I'm on the board of Madison Development Corporation, so I will recuse myself from this discussion.
Thank you. So 423 West Mifflin Street, this is a two-unit residential constructed in 1890 and continues to look it. So it's constructed in 1890 per the assessor record. For the preservation file, it was constructed in 1888 by Charles Grundler, who was a carpenter, and it was designed to be a two-unit structure. So looking back at the folks who were living there, there was always there was initially Grundler and then another tenant, but it was people who it was there was like a tinsmith, and so this was what we consider now missing middle housing, and is very typical of the Mifflin area. So this was always meant to be a multi-unit building. So staff is recommending a finding of historic value related to the vernacular context of Madison's built environment, but that the building itself is not historically, architecturally, or culturally significant. We have information about this. This is something that we see citywide. We see a particular concentration in the Mifflin area. It is part of the vernacular context of Madison, but this building in and of itself is not historically or architecturally significant. This building Heather, is somewhat similar. Heather, oh, yes, sir.
You just to be clear, you say that the staff believes that the building itself is not. What is then the land? What's the staff believes is historic? Just the land itself? If it's not the structure, what is?
Right. So what this finding of historic value is what I consider the middle of the road finding, and that there is a history here, and it is more of a messaging for the future of these are the types of resources that are going away. But it is not saying that this building is something that we necessarily need to save, that this building is not something that we would say, you know what, this is possibly worthy of being a landmark. This is there is a historic and general cultural value for what this building represents, but not providing the messaging saying, and this is something that we then need to keep. We're speaking to the larger history and context of Madison. Does that make sense? Commissioner Taylor, if you're talking, I cannot hear you.
No, I wasn't. I'm just listening to you finish the point. But please continue if you was going on to the next one.
Sure thing, yes, sir. All right, so 425 West Mifflin is right next door. And so single family home constructed in 1884 per the assessor record. For all that, I think this building has probably more historic integrity than the building next door. I don't have a preservation file for this building. It's really kind of hit or miss on what I've got a preservation file on. And there's no state site file for this property. It's a gable front and wing, Queen Anne, and it retains good historic integrity. So doing another middle of the road recommendation that this has historic value related to the vernacular context of Madison's built environment, but the building itself is not historically, architecturally, or culturally significant. We have plenty of gable front and wing Queen Anne's in the building. This is not a rare remaining resource. And we don't actually have any of the history associated with it because this wasn't a property that previously the city found that it needed to be documented. So here's your slate of potential findings you could make.
Does somebody have a motion? Molly.
Yeah, I guess I just have one thought first. I mean, one maybe challenge with our definitions is that as things exist now, these types of buildings exist, you know, there are enough of them that exist, but they're going away. And so does the one that gets saved just sort of end up being the one that's like, as they go away, eventually there will be one left. And that yes. One is the one that gets saved rather than this one just because it happens to be the last one, not mm-hmm. because that one's any better than this one, I guess. That's kind of how it's going to happen.
Yes. So the for this particular area, there was a public planning process for what was known as the Mifflandia plan, that talked through, are there areas that we want to preserve? Are there areas where we are talking about redevelopment for what we want to see with reshaping this part of town? And this is one of the areas that was highlighted for redevelopment. So it went through the process. It did come to Landmarks Commission. It is sad to see these buildings go. We do have examples of these types of buildings in the Third Lake Ridge Local Historic District. So we are preserving some of both that story and for the like workforce housing of its day, but also the architectural styles. So the city is preserving some areas of the city with that story and that flavor of building type on the isthmus. We don't have any here, and there hasn't been a movement to preserve or create a historic district in the Mifflin area. So, yeah, if there is movement on that front, great, happy to work with folks. But for right now, when it went through its process, it was this area has a strong potential for redevelopment. But I feel you.
I mean, and it's interesting. I mean, most of the population living in that area are students who may not have the same kind of investment in the historical preservation of their I don't know, neighborhood. But I'm comfortable moving B.
Maurice, is that a second?
Yes.
Thank you. I am going to assume unanimous.
I'm just going to say, I think for the record, I agree with Maurice in the context of it being, you know, obviously I understand the what we have in front of us in the context of our options, but it is challenging to see the sort of the stark jump from what is considered C in the context of historical value, cultural significance, historical significance, architectural significance. I mean, I think even just like for me, the historical significance has would be of that place, like of that neighborhood. This is the anchor or the architectural type that defined that area. I would probably be vote no for B, just because just I know we don't have a lot of teeth as the commission. We're just making a recommendation, but I do think that it's something to flag for the city.
I do believe that prior to being the chair of the Landmarks Commission, anytime these came in, and they are difficult, especially on that east side where we are kind of demolishing a lot of things that aren't already landmarks, that are kind of key to the cultural, the vernacular feeling of downtown Madison that at least I and I think many of us know. You know, we are like what Heather, I used to have a thing where it was like, can we say that? Can we add also that it's sad that we keep losing these and that these are like we are going to run out of things to demolish at some point, and it is going to change the feeling of the east side. Molly.
I guess I have a question about what we give to
Plan Commission.
Plan Commission. Yeah. Like, are there like is Edna able to amend my motion to add some additional commentary? Or is it
So,
A, B, or C?
what, so we provide more detailed findings and discussion for what goes on to Plan Commission. So, what we have done previously when there's been a voice of dissent is to provide details from that person who is voicing their dissent so that Plan Commission can both say, well, Landmarks Commission found this for these reasons, but one of the commissioners in opposition said XYZ. And then they take that into account for what part of their consideration of whether or not to approve a demolition. And so Edna said some things on the record, and we can include that in the minutes.
Okay.
Now, Chair, I will say since we have one person recused,
Mm-hmm.
And we have two people voting in favor. You're going to need to vote.
I do vote B, but I also agree with Edna's comments. And I, like I said, as I've said previously in comments before I was chair, it is understandable why we are choosing to move forward with demolishing these, but at some point we are going to hit a point where we are drastically changing the way that the East Side feels by taking out these things that are B's.
Okay. All right. So that was the easy stuff. Well, let's talk about the difficult one. Well, so 427 West Mifflin Street. So this is a four-unit residential building that was constructed in 1929. It is English Revival style. Well, so per the assessor, 1929, per the preservation file, 1928. It was designed by Notice and Madison architect Ferdinand Cronenberg. Cronenberg's papers have been digitized by the Dane County Historical Society. You can, so I included links in the staff report so you can look through both the plans for this particular structure and also his entire collection. Cronenberg did some residential, but a lot of larger buildings, churches and schools, but did buildings, you know, of this caliber, I would say. So this building retains excellent historic integrity. It was originally the home of Anton, who was a plumber, and Marie Metz and their children. And then over time, if you look through, you know, list all their children, they had quite a few children. And over time, it became an apartment building. And so ended up evolving into a multi-unit building. So this staff's recommendation is a finding of historic value as the work of noted Madison architect Ferdinand Cronenberg, and as an intact example of English Revival style missing middle housing in 1920s Madison. This came through, oh, maybe about a decade ago for a similar proposal by the Madison Development Corporation. And well, and you can see with the Mifflander next door, and the proposal was modified to save this building at that point. But coming back in now, Madison Development Corporation is looking at providing more density for affordable housing, and this is a smaller structure. The Madison Development Corporation has suggested that they name the new building the Cronenberg and have a photo exhibit inside for why the building has the name. But that as a possible mitigation, that is something for Plan Commission to take into account. Lambert's Commission, you can talk about if you think that addresses the historic value. But really what is tasked before you is speaking to, does this property have historic value or not? So here are your potential generic motions, and I would recommend you make specific findings.
I guess I would like to say, even though I don't get to vote, the proposal to call it the Cronenberg and then put up a little exhibit is not enough, but that is a bit of my profession showing through, and it is always the easy way out, particularly with mitigation, in that we'll just slap up a plaque and someone will read it and it will be fine. And preservation is moving away from let's install an interpretive sign and walk away. I don't know if I have a suggestion for what to do, but I think that it is pretty low hanging fruit and it is literally the least they can do. They could move the building somewhere and offer it as, I don't know, affordable housing for someone. But
Katie, anyways, I will interject. That has been discussed, and I believe that they are willing to facilitate a move of the building if that, you know, I mean, there was just another giant one, as you probably all know, that was moved earlier this summer. So I think they're perfectly willing and would gladly do that should the opportunity arise.
I think that would be a great idea. I know it probably would not work in downtown, but there was, like, out here on the west side of Madison, there was a historic farmhouse that they moved and kept as the office and then attached the apartment building to it. And the farmhouse itself was not, like, it looked fine on the outside, but the inside it had been a restaurant. It was a mess. I believe they completely gutted it and turned it into the apartment building's offices. But it looks really nice. I'm really proud of them for doing, like, keeping the house and turning it into their offices. I don't think that's an option here based on zoning and a variety of other reasons, but looking for a motion, sorry.
I can move C.
Is there a second? Molly, I'm going to assume unanimous consent unless I hear otherwise. I think that's just you, Maurice, if you agree or you don't, or if you will. Yep, Maurice, see your hand up. If you are talking, you are still on mute.
Oh no, I was trying to second a motion. I guess the hand stayed up. It's a delayed reaction.
No worries. So, sorry. Do you agree with C for this one, or
C? I was thinking this was a textbook C for me.
Okay,
so I was excellent. Agreeing with the motion.
Okay, thank you so much. Okay, so I'm going to assume unanimous consent for that one. And I'm just looking for a motion to adjourn. Edna? Molly, thank you guys very much. And thank you, and have an excellent September.
Bye.
Everyone.
Bye-bye.